Let's talk a little economics on After Six, specifically what's going on with unemployment in the state of Connecticut. Joining us now is a professor of economics, Richard Grossman from Wesleyan. Hey, Richard, thanks for being here.
Hey, Todd, great to be with you.
So numbers came out last week. These are big numbers, right? Important numbers?
Yeah, this is the usually the first Friday of the month, the Bureau of Labor Statistics releases data for the previous month. So it's some of the earliest data we get, usually, you know, for things like gross domestic product or some of the other big numbers, we have to wait weeks and maybe months in order to get some readout on the data. But the unemployment data come out pretty quickly. I think they come out at 8:30 in the morning on the Friday, first Friday of the month. And so that's a really quick readout on what's been going on in the economy in the last month. And it's one of the first set of numbers that people sort of glom onto.
And before we get into the specifics of the current numbers, what has happened this year now that we're three quarters of the way into it? What sort of trend line was the state on?
Well, the interesting thing is that the unemployment rate has fallen yet again nationally to a new low. We're now down to 3.5%. So...
And does that mean something? I never know if those, they're such crude numbers and don't necessarily mean good when they're going down or bad when they're going up.
Yeah, that's right. You sort of, it's first of all, it's one piece of information out of many pieces of information. It happens to be information that everyone likes to look at because a lot of people are either working or are unemployed, and so it's a piece of information that we all seem to pay a lot of attention to. But I agree, the numbers are not always straightforward. So having a 3.5% unemployment rate basically means that out of 1,000, if we have 1,000 people in the workforce, and that would be people, adults, I think 16 and up, and that are not retired, are not in prison, are not hospitalized, that 35 of them would be out of work, looking for work and out of work. So that's, in a sense, that's a pretty low number. I mean, historically, certainly for the last 10 years, the number peaked at about 10% after the financial crisis, and it's been really working its way down ever since. So in that sense, there are not a ton of unemployed workers.
The key is those groups that take people out of the count. For example, there's been this long-running trend, I guess, of people who are older but still would normally be in the workforce who just haven't come back after the downturn a decade ago. Is that still operative?
Well, that's right. So there's a thing that a phenomenon that economists call the discouraged worker effect. And so what you see is that for people to be counted as unemployed, they have to be looking for work. So if you've been out of work for a while, and at some point you just give up, either for whatever reason, you could be a younger person and just or older. When you stop looking for work, you stop being counted as unemployed. So if you're not being you're not counted as employed, you're just counted as neither employed nor unemployed, which means a lot of discouraged workers means that the measured unemployment rate will go down. And we saw some of this happen during the financial crisis or in the wake of the financial crisis. A lot of people started to give up. And in fact, that put downward pressure on the unemployment rate. I think what economists would tell you now is that a lot of those people are trying to get back into the labor force. And so that might actually, there may be fewer of those. And so I don't think that that's necessarily as big an effect on the unemployment rate as it was 5 or 10 years ago.
So is there any reason for us to look at that unemployment rate and say, given that it's a crude number, it's still a number that we track over time, so it's an indicator. Can we look at it as a pretty good indicator that people who want a job are in pretty good shape for getting one right now?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think you've got it exactly right. You want to look at the long-term trend, and it has been going down since the peak of the post-financial crisis recession. that doesn't mean that all is wonderful if you're in the labor force. So there are a lot of other things going on. There are a lot of people who are working part-time who'd like to be working full-time. There are a lot of people who are doing contract work who'd like to be having regular jobs with benefits.
Yeah.
There's also the notion of wages. You know, normally in markets of any sort, there's a high level of employment or a lot of demand for the product, whether it's labor or capital or widgets or really anything, that usually pushes the price up. Well, it turns out that last month the wage rate went up, but it went up by less than it had gone up in the previous month. So it suggests that even though the unemployment rate is low, that still hasn't had an effect on wages. And normally we would expect a really strong labor market to have some positive impact on wages.
We're talking with Professor Richard Grossman from Wesleyan. So let's go to last Friday and the numbers that came out. What did we see on Friday?
So one of the big numbers that came out is every month they tell you how many jobs were created. And last month what they told us was that there were 136,000 new jobs created, which sounds great, except that last year the average per month was about 225,000. So the pace of job growth seems to have slowed a little bit. The other thing is that jobs in manufacturing seem to have slowed down considerably. Earlier in the year, they were adding about 25,000 jobs a month in manufacturing. I think last month it was down about 2,000. So manufacturing hasn't been doing that well. Some of this we can talk about is tied probably to the trade, with the trade issues that are coming up. Things that have done well are services and medical things like home health care and medical services. Those things seem to be doing well, but manufacturing has been definitely lagging.
What is that about? What are the pressures on manufacturing?
Well, I think the trade war is a big start. We export a lot of stuff. We do a lot of business with countries that we're at the moment, having a trade war with, or in the midst of a trade war, and so that means that there's going to be less. We're going to have less capacity to export to these people. There's going to be less demand for our stuff. People will put tariffs on our goods. And so you get into these tit for tat trade battles. So that seems to be something that's worrying the market in general. People are very concerned in the business community because there's a lot of uncertainty. Will the trade war with China be resolved? Will it not be resolved? I think there's a great deal of concern that if it's not resolved, and if in fact it gets worse, then that could be an even bigger drag on economic growth.
One of the things I hear said about our economy is that there's a sensitivity to how we're doing, which is artificially high considering how well we're doing. The economy's moving along pretty well, but there's a lot of caution, and some of that is connected to the fact that the world is looking like it's in recession or in recession. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Well, the world is looking like a pretty uncertain place, I'd say. You know, we like certainty, and business really doesn't like uncertainty. And so the issue of, you know, we don't know if Britain is going to stay in the European Union. We don't know if the United States is going to end up in a trade war with China. We don't know what's going on.
Okay, so the president's trade policies are definitely impacting more than just the U.S. economy.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you can hear when the chair of the Fed speaks out and they talk about the uncertainty, I think largely they're speaking about uncertainty having to do with trade policy. And most of that is the administration's trade policy. Some of it has to do with what's going on in Europe with Brexit. But I think that the trade policy, there's a lot of uncertainty. Business doesn't like uncertainty.
Yeah. But that would suggest that maybe there are other numbers that you as an economist are looking at and seeing that, okay, the world is in a pretty good place, but there are these artificial factors pushing downward on something that wants to be soaring. Are there trends like that going on? I'm just making that up, but I'm wondering if that's how your mind works around these sorts of issues.
Well, I think there was a fair bit of optimism about 6 months ago about how the world economy was doing, that they were beginning to have some growth in Europe. The United States was growing, not gangbusters, but we were growing. But, you know, 6 months instability over trade wars and uncertainty, I don't think these things just come rushing back. It's not clear if the trade war is resolved exactly when that will kick in and make things better. The other thing is, part of the reason the United States was doing relatively well is because of the big tax cut. So there was a big tax cut. Look at the size of our deficit. The deficit has grown dramatically. The government debt has grown dramatically. Politicians who used to worry about the government spending more than it takes in seem to have completely forgotten about it. So, sure, if you write a big enough check, you can basically keep the economy moving pretty well. But I think that the combination of really not being able to do that endlessly and difficulties or potential difficulties with trade may, you know, make the outlook look not quite as good. The question is, if the trade war is resolved, does that mean we will spring back to where we were 6 months ago? I'm not sure. I would tend to doubt it. But
is that because there are issues of trust and who you want to do business with?
Yeah, I mean, there's some of that. I mean, there's issues of stability. I mean, whatever you think of what's going on in Washington, there's been a fair bit of instability, and a lot of it's emanating from the administration. It's what's on this week. And again, the tariffs that came, they came boom, 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 right out of no place. I mean, okay, emergency tariffs on this, emergency tariffs on that, a lot of it seemingly without rhyme or reason. So the policy directive from Washington has been pretty unstable. So I think if we can sort that out, if we can get things, you know, some sort of normality back to life, then I think that for sure will be a positive effect on the economy.
Professor Richard Grossman is here from Wesleyan. So I'm curious about this as somebody who's interested in politics and watching the effect that Trump has on everybody, particularly the people who are frenzied over his every move. As I look backward and try to find one of the things that people were frenzied about that actually turned out to be memorable to the average person, I don't find them. In general, the focus is on his behavior, and a lot of things he's done have actually worked out fine, and nobody's objecting to them in retrospect. And I wonder if that there is that opportunity with the economy. The economy seems to be going along well, although there is this trepidation that you've been talking about. But we do have these super low unemployment numbers, and overall, people are happy, but there are some signs of unrest in the economy. Home prices aren't great. And on the other hand, inflation hasn't become a problem. So I wonder if, in terms of Trump, my interest is maybe he's demonstrating that there is more room for politics to be more rambunctious than just having presidents who walk carefully, making sure they don't say a word that would disrupt foreign countries. I'm kind of excited that he's pushing back on China. I'm concerned about our future against China, them becoming a superpower, and that we'll look back and say what morons we were sitting there all that time making them the most powerful country on earth and the most powerful economy in the world, and we never asked anything in return, even when they were screwing us on things. We just sat there and smiled because nobody was willing to risk the good economy. What's your feeling on that?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there, but let me just say I agree that there are a lot of things that China does that are problematic. You know, in the old days, again, several years ago, we'd complain about Chinese currency manipulation, and then basically towards the end of the Obama administration, they left off that. They eased off on doing that. Again, I think there are different ways to approach international relations and trade policy. And, you know, and there are real serious problems with China. There are things about intellectual property. There are things about forcing companies that are there to turn over intellectual property and have partners. And so there are really big problems. I don't think Trump is the first one to think about this or to address it. The previous administration, the previous several administrations have been addressing it. I guess the question is, do you want to address it with a sledgehammer, which really the Trump trade policy has not been, you know, there's been no specific mention of intellectual property, right? He just went out and his argument is we're importing too much from China, so let's impose tariffs on them. And then, you know, we're importing too much from Canada. Hey, let's impose tariffs on them, too. Eventually, you have no friends left. I mean, from a political point of view, you have no one left to do trade with on an even playing field. And, you know, I firmly believe that the United States can compete with anyone, for sure with the Chinese. There's some things the Chinese do well, and there's some things that they do less well. And I think that, you know, we can both benefit from trade. I don't think trading with China or even for a time having a trade deficit with China is the end of the world. I think we need to make China play by the rules. And I don't see anything in Trump trade policy that's really and truly addressing that. It's just import less to us. Oh, and buy some more soybeans, pigs, whatever, buy more stuff from us, and it'll all be fine. And then he turns around and he says, oh, look, they're buying more stuff from us. Isn't that wonderful? That's not how this works. There are real problems. There are fundamental rules issues, and we need to get the Chinese to focus on them instead of we put a tariff on you, you put a tariff on us. So I would say that Trump's trade policy, you know, I think I think the notion that we're being screwed by the Chinese is maybe not the right way to look at it. We got to make China play by the same rules that we play by, and there are a lot of ways to do that. I just don't think slapping tariffs on a bunch of things and telling us that we're going to bring back steel production to Pennsylvania and Ohio is the right way to do that.
So you're saying he's not pressing specific issues that would justify putting pressure on China. He's just really twisting their arms to give us more money.
Correct. And then he's also saying that under the trade law, there's supposed to be, he's putting these tariffs on an emergency basis. Well, a national emergency is not, you know, what the Chinese are doing is not a national emergency. It's a bad thing, and it's something we can fix with negotiation, playing hardball. I agree with all of that, but we skipped over all the negotiations, and he went straight to putting on tariffs. And, of course, the Chinese, while the Chinese economy is not nearly as productive on a per-person basis as ours is, it's a pretty big place, and I just don't think that I don't think the end game that he has in mind, if indeed he has an end game in mind, is at all useful or practical. I think you need to get them to sit down and play by the same rules that we do. And there are a lot of countries in the world that might be our allies in enforcing these kinds of rules on China. But guess what? We're imposing tariffs on all our friends, too. So they're not going to help us out. So I just think that it's great to say he stands up for this or he stands up for that, but he's not doing it in an intelligent, methodical way. He's standing up just to start a fight, which I understand has some appeal. We all get frustrated with how things work in this world, how politics works, how international negotiations work. There's a lot of frustration there. But it's not clear to me that the way to address that is to just say, the heck with it. We're going to throw on tariffs, and we're going to go nuclear before, you know, we've even fired a slingshot at each other.
No, that's great. Thank you for clarifying. When we spoke last week, I sensed that you had a little unease about the trade policy, so I wanted to flesh that out with you, and you did a great job explaining it. Thank you, sir. Great to have you here
again.
Professor Richard Grossman, Wesleyan University economics professor. We'll talk to you again soon.
Looking forward to it, Todd.